Hi, everyone. This is Kevin, and you are listening to English Roundtable Podcast. Today, I am joined with Zane. Hi, Zane.
Good morning.
And how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me on again.
Very good. You're welcome. And I would like to talk to you a little bit about how and why you came to Japan. This is something that we haven't really talked about personally, so I figured let's record it and we'll have it for history.
It is a little strange that we haven't actually discussed this beforehand,
right.
I think now is a good time.
Let's do it.
So, I'm looking forward to listening to your story, and we'll see where we go.
Same here. Would you like to start?
Okay, so my story goes back quite a long way. When I was in elementary school, I don't really know why, but I just had this fascination for Japan. I was just interested in Japan. I did a couple of school projects on Japan, and there was a few TV shows and things like that on where they travel to Japan, and I just thought, what a fantastic place. It was so different from where I grew up in South Australia in terms of the technology and just the people everywhere. It was just a fascinating place. Like, it didn't even seem like a real place. Seemed almost mystical and magical.
Yeah.
So it was always in the back of my mind that one day I might like to go over there, mm-hmm. at least for a holiday. But I didn't really think of anything too serious at that stage.
Do you remember what kind of sparked that? Was it just maybe in a textbook or, like you said, like a television show?
We had to do a school project on a foreign country, and I didn't really know what to choose. I just thought Japan seemed interesting,
mm-hmm.
And coincidentally, I'd seen a show on Japan on the TV recently, and I guess those two things just came together.
Okay.
And I thought, let's do the project on Japan. So because I did the project, I really did a lot of research. And at that stage, it was pre-internet research.
Right, right.
So I was reading books, and I just got kind of obsessed with the history and the culture. And the more I read and the more I researched, the more interested I became.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And then... So when did you actually make your first visit to Japan?
Okay, so it would have been around about 2004.
Okay.
I came to Japan for the first time. But before that, I was actually importing cars from Japan into Australia. So I had another Japan connection. I'd always been interested in Japanese cars and the street racing and the drifting and that sort of thing. All of my friends were into that.
Oh, okay.
So I actually started a small business and I was importing cars from Japan. So that kind of strengthened the connection as well. But all of that was done online.
Mm.
So I was bringing these cars in with people, dealers over here in Japan that I'd met, all online. So
okay, like a forum or something? Like that?
It was a forum, and I was a member of an auction, and I had a couple of connections over here, but I made all of those connections online. So I hadn't actually been to Japan before that. And then finally, I decided, look, I need to go over and have a look at these cars in person and actually just have a look at Japan. I've been interested in Japan. Now I've been doing business with people in Japan. It's time to actually go over.
Right.
So it came to a stage where I'd kind of wrapped up the business for various reasons. And I thought, I've pretty much had enough of living in Australia. I want to try somewhere else.
Mm.
And I had been, so I did actually come to Japan for a holiday for about a week or so.
Okay.
And that was in 2004.
I see.
And I loved it. I loved every second of it,
right?
As most people do when they come for a holiday to Japan. I liked everything. I liked the busyness. I liked going to the countryside areas. Just every single thing I saw or did and experienced, I loved. And from that moment on, it was always in the back of my mind that I need to come back and actually live here.
Mm.
So that kind of set the fire going, so to speak.
Kind of similar feeling too. When I first came, I was like, I have to live here.
Yeah.
Like I have to.
Yeah. There was just something about it.
Yeah.
How long did you actually stay when you first came? Did you come for a trip at first or?
So my story is a little bit different.
Okay.
So as you know, I've got family in Japan. My grandmother is Japanese.
Right.
So I have that family tie. I'll try to make this story as brief and as quick as possible. It's a little hard considering it goes over decades.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I didn't really know all of this, yeah. So I'm quite interested to hear.
So I'll start in the past, and we'll move up to the present, and then we can continue with where we're at now.
Sure.
But basically, so my mother was born in Tokyo. You know, this is after the war and all of that.
Right.
And of course, my grandfather was in the service.
Okay.
So that's how they met. So my mother was born here, but they moved back to around my hometown. So around Tennessee.
Right.
In America. Through some terrible, unfortunate events, my mother was basically, I don't know, you could say homeless.
Right.
So her mother died when she was 5.
Oh.
Giving birth to my aunt. So my mother's sister, who did survive. However, my grandmother, she passed away during that.
Oh, no.
So there's one parent gone. And then when my mother was 14, her father died. So
not a good start.
No, not a good start at all. So my mother, she has 3 siblings, and they basically had no family to take care of them.
Wow.
When my grandmother did die, that was the only connection, you know, to Japan.
Right,
so,
right.
So my family in Japan knew that their daughter, their whatever, died. But that was pretty much it. The connection was cut from then on.
How?
So my mother and her siblings, they grew up with, you know, no Japanese, nothing.
Yeah, I think that was a case for a lot of Japanese people in America at that time. They sort of just broke the connection completely.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, we barely had good telephone service, right?
Yeah. So how are you supposed to? Right. There was no ancestry DNA and all of that stuff to help you out. Yeah.
And so, you know, whenever my grandmother died, that connection got cut. So my mother basically just grew up her entire life not knowing her family in Japan.
Wow.
And she tried in the 80s to find my family,
okay.
But, you know, again, 80s, no, really no internet.
The technology wasn't really there for that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. So she kind of just gave up at that point because she was already in her, you know, 20s, going on 30s maybe. So it wasn't until I was in the sixth grade, so I was about 12 years old, and I went to a friend's birthday party whose father's Japanese.
Okay.
And where I'm from, there's at the time, there was not a lot of Japanese people living.
I can't imagine there would have been.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, California or New York, of course.
Yeah.
Plenty,
yeah.
But, you know, where I'm from, there was not really that kind of community.
Mm.
There is today, actually, because Toyota, there's a lot of factories there.
Oh, right, of
Nissan's,
course. Yeah.
Nissan's
yeah.
there. But back then, it was very sparse. So they got to talking, and my mother just kind of relayed her past life and history with Japan.
Right.
And my friend's father knew a police officer in Tokyo. And basically just said, look, give me anything you have, any information, and I'll see, you know, if we can find your family.
Right.
So my mother doesn't have much because, number one, you know, she was very young when her mother died.
Yeah,
so
she doesn't actually have a lot of information
exactly.
to go on.
I think she had maybe like one letter and maybe like 2 pictures. That's it, of her her mother.
I can't imagine being in that situation. Like, I really...
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
I mean, I've just grown up. Both parents and seemingly normal childhood. To have that happen, I just cannot imagine living through that.
I couldn't either.
No.
But so basically 2 weeks later, my friend's father contacted us and basically said, I think we found your uncle. And this has been 38 years since my mother had any contact
with
family.
That's amazing.
So we went to their house, the friend's house. We made a call. And basically my uncle, when he, you know, of course, this is all in Japanese
because
my friend's father can speak. And my uncle basically just almost hung up on him because he was like, this is a joke.
Yeah.
You know, please don't call me again.
Very macabre joke.
Yeah, yeah. Because he's basically said, like, I'm here with your niece.
Yeah. I mean, imagine what he would have been thinking, though. Like,
right.
How would that even happen? Yeah.
Yeah. Almost 40 years.
Yeah.
Right? So. The father just explained certain details, you know, that of course only family would know, like names and places and those types of things. So basically, you know, he ended up believing. And then in 1999, that's when my parents first came over to visit. So my mother came and my father first.
Right.
And then I didn't go until 2006 was my first time.
Right.
So that was kind of my graduation gift.
Okay.
They were like, all right, we're going to take you to Japan. And to be honest, I didn't really have an interest like you did when you were younger.
Okay.
It was kind of just like, okay, you know, I'll go. It's a cool, looks like a cool place.
So you didn't have that initial childhood interest, but you actually had a much deeper connection.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird, right?
That is funny how that happened.
Yeah. So yeah, same as you, when I first came, I knew, I was like, I have to live here somehow.
It's a weird feeling, isn't it?
It really is, yeah.
But I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't know what it is. I can't pinpoint any particular thing, but everything I did and everything I saw was just amazing.
Yeah.
And that may happen if you travel to another country as well. I haven't done a lot of traveling, so that might be just a thing that you get while you're traveling. But I know for certain, when I came here the first time, I spent about a week and a half, and it was just a game changer.
Right.
And I wanted more.
Yeah. And maybe you had the same thing as, like, for me, it was thinking, how can I get to that point where I can move?
Mm.
And it was almost like that was my goal for almost 10 years.
Okay.
It took from that initial feeling of like, I really want to live here. How do I achieve that?
Mm.
So, you know, I got to go to university, and then I worked, and then, you know, how do I gain even more? So go back to university. So for me, from that initial dream, it took almost 10 years to officially move.
Okay.
And that was like
that's dedication.
Right, right. I always just had it in the back of my mind, went through a lot of things, but the timing just came perfect where it was like, this is it. It's time to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same kind of feeling. I didn't have as much preparation as
well,
you did.
Well, mine took a lot of just like, steps, like I have to do these things in order to actually survive.
Need to do one thing to do another,
right,
to be able to get to this level. Yeah. For me, it was, after the initial holiday, I thought, yes, this is somewhere that I need to go. But I went back to Australia and I sort of fell back into my routine there and I was quite comfortable there. And then it just got, I had some Japanese friends in Australia as well, and I was always asking them questions and getting bits and pieces of information about it. And that just spurred me on even further.
Mm,
but it wasn't till about 2008 or late 2007 that I made the move over.
Okay.
And didn't really know what was going to happen there either. I used the working holiday visa system.
I see.
Which is quite easy for Australian people to do.
Mm.
More difficult for American people, I believe. I don't know if they've got that reciprocal agreement.
Sure, 'cause I didn't come through a working holiday, so I haven't really researched it.
But for Australians, New Zealanders, Canadians, a lot of other countries, but not America, I don't think, they've got a reciprocal working holiday visa. So a lot of Japanese people go to those countries. A lot of foreigners come into Japan that way. So that's for 1 year.
Okay.
So I thought I'll go and do that and see what happens. That'll be a good experience. I'm legally allowed to work 20 hours per week, so I can earn enough to survive and I can just have a good look around. And if I like it after a year, I can see what happens.
Yeah.
So did that. Got deeper down the rabbit hole, fell in love with it even more, managed to extend my working holiday visa into a proper work visa.
Okay,
and
good.
Ended up staying for around about 3.5 years in Osaka.
Oh, okay. So you started off in Osaka.
That's right. Yeah. I thought Tokyo is just a bit too much right off the bat, especially coming from a fairly small place in Australia. I thought Osaka seems like a good place to start.
A good medium.
Yeah. And I heard it was cheaper as well. So.
That's always helps. Always helps, yeah.
Did you come straight to Tokyo?
Yeah, I first started.
Brave man.
Well, kind of. I lived with my family for about 6 months in Chiba.
Okay.
So not really Tokyo, but, you know, I was
close
in that,
enough.
Yeah, close enough. I was in that honeymoon stage. So, you know, every weekend almost I'd be traveling into Tokyo. Yeah. And, you know, that's why now I just want to get out of Tokyo. I had my fill, pretty much.
I feel the same way, yeah.
So yeah, I lived in Chiba for the first maybe year.
Okay.
And then I moved to Tokyo after that.
Right.
So yeah, pretty much started here.
that's quite brave.
Yeah. What I really, and you can probably attest to this too, is it really shows you who you are. Like, it's almost like your survival skills have to just kick in.
Absolutely.
And I think it's really interesting. I felt that to be very a new experience that I never had. Yes. And I personally think most everybody should experience that at least once. See what you're made of.
Yeah.
Go to another country, no plan,
yes.
just do it and see if you can survive. Because I think you can. That's the thing. There's some mentality that we have where when we have nothing, we're going to figure it out. Or at least I did.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with what you're saying there. I believe it made me a better person.
Mm.
I hadn't really lived alone at that stage. Like I was basically came from living with my parents or from living with other friends, but I'd never really lived alone before. So it was new country and living alone, foreign language that I didn't really know any of. So there was a lot of variables there that could have gone quite bad.
Right.
But it worked out so well.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Just found a place to live and then met some people, met some really good friends in Osaka. I actually met people. I was a skateboarder back in Australia. I saw some people skating one night in Osaka and ended up just skating with them and became really good friends with them. Met other people through them, and it just kind of ballooned out in terms of the experiences that I had and the connections that I made. And it all just happened organically.
Like, right,
didn't really force anything. It just kind of go with it and see what happens. I don't know if you were the same
way. Yeah. I mean, you can't really, it's hard to do anything if it's forced and it'd be good.
Yeah.
Know? So
yeah.
I think you brought up a good point. Like just everything was organic. It just happened
by
chance. I feel like everything was meant to be in
That's
some
right.
way.
Yeah. No, I feel exactly the same way. And it's a very weird feeling to describe. And so many people will never try anything like this.
Right. Right.
None of my friends have ever tried anything like this. The only other people who obviously have are other foreigners that I meet in Japan. They have similar stories. But if I go back home, my friends thought I was just absolutely bonkers for wanting to do something like this. And some people in my family, like I remember my grandparents, like, why would you even do that? Why would you want to do it? Like you've got a pretty good life going here in Australia. And I just said, I want something else.
Yeah.
I want possibly more.
Right, exactly.
Or possibly less. I don't know. But I wanted something else. Mm. Wanted a change. And it was honestly the best thing that I ever did. My life is here now. My life is in Japan and in Tokyo. And I can't imagine going back and living in Australia permanently. Just can't imagine doing it.
Yeah.
No desire to do it.
Yeah, kind of same. Every time I go back to America, I always throw stuff away.
Yeah.
Everything's at my parents' house that I technically own. But it's funny because every time I go, a little bit more goes out. So now all I have is I've got vinyl records because those are just way too hard to move to Japan.
And you need to keep those somewhere.
Exactly. So I've got vinyl records and maybe one like storage tub of just, childhood things that I just don't want to throw away yet.
Right.
And then that's pretty much it. I have no clothes.
No clothes.
Nothing.
Right. Oh, you've cleared the clothes. I've still got the clothes back in Australia. So,
well, I have a little bit because, I don't
need to wear something.
Exactly. And it's easier, I don't have to pack as much.
Yeah.
It's probably the same thing. So I've got a little bit of clothing, but I mean, everything else, just nothing, nothing to my name. And even when I moved here, all I brought was probably same as you. I brought two big suitcases and a backpack, and that's all I had. I sold my car in America, everything with like housing, done
just
with.
Just severed all ties, basically.
Yeah. And the same thing as well, like my mother's friends would say, why would he go there? Like, why would you allow him? Which is funny to ask since I'm an adult.
but it's almost like people were concerned. Right, that you were going, and they would ask, "Are you sure you know what you're doing?" And my answer was, "No, not really. But if it's that bad, I can just come back."
That's the thing.
It's not like I'm stuck over there.
Right. Yeah.
Even if I don't have any money, I can go to the embassy and I can get back.
Right.
So there's no reason to really worry about anything.
Right. And it's not like you're going to some country where there's
you know,
crime and
I'm not moving to like Beirut or somewhere. Right, like, right. It's a pretty safe. It's much safer than Australia.
Mm.
So it's one of the safest places in the world. So,
right. No issues.
Good
really.
Healthcare. Yeah. I couldn't really see any negatives about moving over, despite what other people might have said.
Right. So, yeah, very interesting. Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, that's basically my story. Is just had that family connection, made that one trip over, and then just started coming back every summer.
Well, your story is much deeper, and I feel privileged to have heard it. So thank you for telling me. It makes mine seem not so special, but you've got a deep connection there. But we both ended up over here, and we're both loving it. So
yeah, that's all that matters.
That's the goal, really, isn't it?
It really is. Like you said, I don't see myself ever moving. It would take something pretty drastic.
Yeah.
Thing is, to have that option is kind of nice.
That's right. That's
right. I enjoy that.
Yeah. Like, so. I do like going back to Australia for trips.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can, I'll spend as long as possible there and go over interstate and visit relatives and whatnot. But usually after a couple of weeks, I'm done. I'm ready to come back.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You've seen everything there so many times that even if you don't go back for 5 years, you go back and you go to all of the old places, nothing really changes, at least right. in my hometown.
Same.
We
might get a new restaurant or something.
That's it. That's about it. That's it. But you see the changes, if there are any. You go to your familiar places and then you're pretty much ready to come back, or at least
right.
I know I am.
Yeah, same. And I think I mentioned this on a past podcast, but I have what's called, or what I call, reverse culture shock.
Mm.
Meaning like I'm going back to where I grew up, so it's not necessarily a different place, but it's almost reversed because it's like I'm going back, but I'm having culture shock at
it
the same time.
It feels weird, doesn't
it?
It's a very strange thing, and I'm glad that you brought that up because I feel that way as well. I'll go to a friend's house and I'll go to take my shoes off or something and they'll just walk in like, oh, that's right, we don't need to do that here.
Yeah.
Or I'll see people interacting with each other and it just feels weird for me.
Yeah,
I'm just so used to the way things are in Japan. Like, I'll get on a train to go somewhere, and it's not packed with people, and it's not clean,
right?
And it'll be a real surprise.
Yeah, people actually annoy me.
Yeah.
When I go back.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just be like, oh, they're so loud or something.
I know.
It's interesting.
Or strangers will come up and talk to you.
Right,
and you'll think, what are you doing? you're not expecting it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Because, I mean, that does not happen at all in Japan.
No.
Somebody really wants something from you.
No. It never happens without a reason. But certainly in some parts of Australia, people will just come up and have a chat for no specific reason at all.
Right.
But, yeah, I did get that occasionally in Osaka, but in Tokyo, no.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their own things to worry about. They're too busy.
Right.
So.
Well, cool. I'm glad we got to catch up on this past.
we finally got to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Wow. That's such an interesting story, man. And I'm glad it kind of worked out, reconnected with family and that sort of thing. That's must have been an amazing moment. So
yeah, very interesting. Sorry, real quick about that is one difference is that, I don't know about in Australia, but in America, if you have like a second or third cousin, we still say that's my cousin.
Yeah.
But in Japan, they don't have that kind of system, right?
No.
So it's weird because I'll go see the uncle I mentioned, that's my great uncle.
Okay.
Technically. And then his sons, you know, would be my cousins, right?
Yes.
We would say they're my cousins.
Yes.
But they always ask, like, so how are we related? Like,
yeah.
Like, it's funny because, like, almost every time I see them, which is, like, a couple times a year.
Right.
We go through, like, the family tree. And it's like, look, this is my mother,
You've
my grandmother.
You've got to point it out every time.
It's funny, yeah.
Wow.
It's just interesting how
that changed. I can't imagine doing that. I mean, I do have relatives even in Australia that I barely ever see.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know we're related, but sometimes I even... forget where all this comes
that's
from
true.
As well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But that your situation just adds another dimension when
you're
talking about different countries and the period in between where there was no contact as well. So
that could be it too.
Yeah,
yeah, just because, I mean, they went pretty much their whole life without knowing us or my family. So,
and had probably accepted that they would never meet
right
again. Just sort of accepted that this is how it is now, and then suddenly there's new members introduced, and it would have been very, very strange and just a touching situation as well to finally reconnect.
Yeah, and I'm lucky enough that my grandmother had two sisters, and they are, well, one's still alive. But I was able to meet them, and like, so it's amazing that they knew they knew her, you know, they knew my grandmother, and they grew up together, right?
That's so good.
Yeah.
That you actually got to speak to those people while they were alive and to actually have that connection there.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is. Well, cool. Thank you so much. I'm happy to hear your history.
Thank you. I'm very glad to hear that deep story and deep connection with Japan.
Certainly. Well, I'll try to think of some more diva stories for next time.
Yeah, please do.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to English Roundtable, made possible by Kanda Gaigo Career College in Tokyo, Japan. If you enjoyed hearing natural English conversation, subscribe and like us wherever you're listening, and check us out on YouTube, Twitter, and our other SNS platforms, which will be in the description for this episode. Head over to the YouTube page to see some of the keywords we used in the conversation and other activities to test your English listening skills. Thanks again, and we'll see you in the next episode.